It's More Money with leading economist Steve Moore.
Stephen Moore is with us, economist.
With more than 30 years' experience as an economist and as a leading thinker of government on business, showing deep understanding of the shifts in the global economy. He's leading economist Steve Moore with More Money on Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's your host, Steve Moore.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Moore. You're listening to More Money on 77 Talk Radio WABC. As always, I want to say thank you for spending a little bit of your afternoon with me. This is my favorite time of the week to be. And by the way, I consider it a privilege to be sitting in front of this microphone talking to you all every Saturday at 1 p.m. where we talk a little bit about politics. We talk a little bit about money. It is, by the way, it's a beautiful day all over the East Coast today. So as soon as you are done listening to this show for an hour, get out there, get outside, go to the park, go to the playgrounds, get your kids outside, get them out from in front of the computer and get out into the fresh air and sunlight. I said this so many times on this show, the two greatest disinfectants and the best way to combat this terrible virus is with fresh air and sunlight. So get out. It's a beautiful, beautiful day across America. So let me start by the way, we have one of my favorite people in the whole world, Mark Siegel, Dr. Mark Siegel. You all know him from Fox News. He's their medical correspondent, one of the smartest guys on healthcare developments in this country, what's happening with coronavirus. And he's going to give us an update. And he's one of these doctors that I can actually understand what he's talking about. So I'm privileged that we're going to have him on. We're going to talk a little bit about what's happening with the economy with Jason Trenor, one of the top Wall Street gurus. But I want to start by talking about some of the headline news. And by the way, of course, the second half of this show, we are going to take your calls, folks, on the More Money hotline. And I'm going to give you that number in a minute because it's my favorite part of the week, by the way, is hearing from you all. I want your opinions on these critical issues of the day. And I want to make sure that you know that number. Don't call now. Wait about 25, 30 minutes, and I want your calls. Last week, we had some great conversations with people in the New York area, and actually some people called from all over the country. We're coast to coast, folks. So 77 Talk Radio WABC and some affiliates around the country. So let me give you this number, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. And we're going to be talking, I'll give you the topics in a couple of minutes, and I'll start with the first one because I want your feedback. And remember, I believe in free speech in this country and on this radio show. I don't just want to hear from my conservative friends. I love hearing from my Democratic friends, my liberal friends. I may disagree with you, but you have a right in this country to express your opinions, and that's what makes our country great. So if you're a liberal, I don't care if you disagree with everything I say. I want to hear from you because that's how we advance good dialogue in this country. And there's too little of it today. You know, we're isolating ourselves and we're listening only to people who agree with us. On this show, we listen to everybody. So 1-800-848-9222. So first issue of the day, what's happening at the border? There is a crisis at the border and it's getting worse every day, every hour, as more and more migrants from all over Central and South America come to the United States border in Mexico, in Texas and Arizona. I have friends that are near the border in those towns, and they're very concerned about the flow of migrants coming into this country and crowding the border illegally. Now, here is my point. I've written books about immigration. I'm an economist. I think that immigrants, and I think the evidence is clear on this, immigrants are the backbone of our economy. They're so amazing. Not all immigrants, but the vast majority come into this country for the right reason, for freedom, for opportunity, for prosperity, to make a better life for their country. That's what America is all about. I don't want to shut the borders. I don't want to shut the borders, folks. I want people to come in, but I want them to do it the right way. And I think most Americans agree with me. If you don't agree with me, I want to hear from you. But I think this idea that anybody can just sneak across the border and come into this country illegally, not follow the rules, is not what America is about. We are a nation of borders. We are a nation that believes in the rule of law. And I'm sorry, you know, as some of my conservative friends say, and I think they're so right about this, what is it about illegal that liberals don't understand? So the problem at the border right now is that Joe Biden and the Democrats are soft on immigration, on illegal immigration. They don't want to keep building the wall that Donald Trump, I think, quite correctly built. We got, I think, 70% of the wall built, and now they don't want to build the rest of it. There's an old saying, right? You all know this. My mom taught this one to me when I was about 5 years old. Remember this one? A chain is only as strong as its weakest link. If you've got holes in the wall, if you have areas of the wall that aren't built, then immigrants are not stupid people. They're going to go around to the areas where the wall is not built. So let's continue to build the wall. Let's secure our border. And then let's have an immigration policy that lets people want to come into this country for the right reason, to work hard, to benefit their family and their children, and to share our freedoms. And yes, to learn English. I think it's important that immigrants, when they come into this country, they learn English. And also, folks, I wonder what you think about this one. They have to learn about America. About America. We don't even teach our own kids about America. You know, they're not teaching kids about George Washington. They're not teaching kids about Abraham Lincoln, about our great history and this greatest nation in the history of the planet. It's been erased. They're erasing our history. Look, have we had dark times in our history? Of course, we're a nation of men and we are not angels. But this is the greatest place on earth. It is a testament to how great this nation is that everybody in the round of the world wants to come here, right? They don't want to go to Germany. They don't want to go to China. They don't want to go to Russia. They don't want to go to France. They don't want to go to Mexico. They want to come to the US of A. So my point is, yes, I want the golden gates to be open, but I want people to come for the right reason. And by the way, I got to say, I don't think we could have gotten through this pandemic without the hard work of Eastern Europeans who come into this country, Asians, the Hispanics who come from Mexico and South America. The vast, vast majority of these people are great people. And I think that they are the salt of the earth. But I believe in legal immigration. I do not believe in illegal immigration. Now, second point I want to make. This is important. We have an economy that I believe is on the mend. The vaccine is getting out there, folks. I said it last week. I'll say it again. By the end of April, I believe anybody who wants to have a vaccine can get a vaccine. I don't believe people should be forced to take a vaccine. I don't believe in a mandatory vaccination. But the vast, vast majority of Americans will get vaccinated. They want to get vaccinated. We started with the old people, the elderly. That's a very smart strategy in most states. And then we're moving towards the younger people. And this is going to largely eradicate this terrible disease. And when that happens, and it should have happened months ago, we got to get our businesses open, our small businesses, the hotels, the airlines, the small mom and pop stores, the grocery stores, movie theaters are now starting about opening up again. Wouldn't it be wonderful to go back and see a movie? You know, I haven't been to a movie theater probably in 14, 15 months. And I love going to the movie theaters. It's fun. I mean, I just get those huge tubs of popcorn and I just slather it with butter. And then I get, you know, the large Coke and just sit down and have a wonderful time. There's something wonderful about going to the movies. We can start doing that. I think you're going to even have people going on cruises again. So we're getting back to normal. Here is my worry. Here is my big, big worry. The Biden tax increase, I think, is insane. I think it's insane. We've got an economy that's getting back on its feet after it's like a prize fighter. You get hit right on the nose and you fall down on the canvas and you get back up. It takes a lot of courage to do that. These businessmen and women who are the heroes of our economy, who've survived this terrible year that we've had, and they're starting to open up their doors again. They're getting their workers back on the job. It's a wonderful thing to see. And now we're going to hit them with tax increases? No. No, I'm sorry. I think that's the wrong strategy. We should not be raising our taxes either at the federal level, or I was talking to my buddy Larry Kudlow. He says that there's some all this talk about raising taxes on, quote, the rich in New York. Now, I bet there are a lot of people who think, oh, well, we're just going to soak the rich. Only people who make over $500,000. You know, only the Jeff Bezos and the people like Zuckerberg and the people like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, they're going to pay all the taxes. No, come on, folks. First of all, if you look at those people at the top 1%, I want you to know this statistic because it's important. More than half of the people, about 2/3 of the people who are those, quote, evil rich people, you know what they do for a living, folks? They own, operate, and invest in small businesses. And small businesses are the spinal cord of our economy. Don't take money out of the small businesses or they can't employ people. As my friend Dick Armey, the great former House Majority Leader, used to say, he's from Texas, he used to say, liberals love jobs, but they hate employers. You can't have jobs without employers. I want everybody back on the job. I want so many jobs in this country that wages go up and everybody gets wealthier and has a higher standard of living, but it starts with businesses. So I'm here to say, I think soak the rich is the wrong strategy. I do think everybody should pay their fair share, no question about it. I'm in favor, by the way, of a flat tax. Have one rate of maybe 18% for everybody. You know, you have a protection for low-income people so they don't have to pay the tax, but no loopholes, no carve-outs, no tax attorneys, no, you know, legal people mumbo-jumbo with thousands and thousands of pages of tax code. You make $1 million, you're going to pay 18% of that. You're going to pay 18% of it. You're not going to find ways around it. We'll raise more revenue because we're going to have so much growth. We're going to have so many new businesses start in this country with a system like that. So the two questions that I'm going to ask you all to call in on are, number one, do you agree with me on the border? Yes to legal immigration, but they have to come in legally, and we cannot tolerate illegal immigration. Tell me if you agree with that. I want to hear from you. And the second one is, do you believe that soak the rich is a good strategy? Should we do that? I know the nation is very divided. In fact, the polls, I think, show that a slight majority of people favor soak the rich. I'm not in favor of soak the rich. And by the way, folks, I'm not rich. I'd love to be rich. I'd hope to be rich, but I'm not there yet. And so we're just still working, waiting on my friend Mark Siegel. So let me give you a few more statistics on this. So people say, well, wait a minute. The rich don't pay their fair share in taxes. Right. Oh, they get around the taxes and they're not paying their taxes. And we got these billionaires that are not paying anything. Let me give you some of these statistics. OK, the top 1%, the richest one out of 100 Americans, they pay, according to the latest IRS data, 42% of the income taxes in this country. 42%. 1% pay more than 90%. Think about that. One out of 100 pay more than 90 out of 100. The way I like to think about this is, let's say you have a room with 100 people, and let's say you have a banquet, okay, and everybody's getting a wonderful meal at this banquet. And when the meal is over, you're going to figure out, well, how should we pay for this meal? If we paid for that meal the way we pay for our taxes, the richest one out of 100 people in that room would pay it for almost half of the whole tab. By the way, the bottom 90% in that room would pay almost zero, almost not zero, but close to zero. That's the way our tax system works. And then it would be like saying, when the dinner's over, hey, that one rich guy over there who's paying, you know, almost half of the tab, he's not paying enough. I mean, come on. I think that we could have a progressive system, but it should be a system that does not deter enterprise in this country and business creation. Now, I want to make a couple of other points. For New York to be raising its taxes right now, New York is the highest tax place in the entire United States of America. And it is hurting New York. You know this. I don't care if you're liberal, conservative. These higher tax rates are really hurting the state of New York. I was in Florida 2 weeks ago. I'm headed to Florida back this week because it's a wonderful place to go this time of year. And I got to tell you, folks, when I was in Palm Beach and I was in Naples and I was in Jacksonville, what I saw everywhere I went was license plates from Connecticut, from New York, from New Jersey. And a lot of these people aren't just there now for a few weeks in the wintertime. These are people who are leaving New York and New Jersey and Connecticut, and they are going to Florida. And you know the answer to this question. What is the tax rate? What is the tax rate there in Florida? The income tax rate is zero, zero. Do you think that has something to do with people moving? Of course it does. Every time you raise taxes on the rich in New York, you know what happens? The rich leave. They go to Texas, or they go to Tennessee, or they go to Florida, or they go to Nevada, or they go to these low tax states. South Carolina has a low tax. There are 9 states in the United States, 9, that have no income tax at all. Now, that includes states like Alaska, which is kind of an outlier. But the states that have no income tax are Washington State, Nevada, South Dakota, New Hampshire. New Hampshire, the live free or die state. So a lot of people leave New York and Massachusetts and they go to New Hampshire where they pay no income tax. Then you got Florida, you have Texas, you have Tennessee. And I got to tell you, there are three or four state governors that I've been working with because I'm you know, devoting my life to trying to get these taxes down in these states. You've got states like West Virginia, you've got Mississippi, you've got Utah, you've got Nebraska, you've got North Dakota. All of these states are realistically talking about lowering their tax rates. And think about this. If those states lower their tax rates and New York raises their tax rates and New Jersey raises their tax rates, what do you think is going to be the effect of this? More and more people are going to leave. You're going to lose the millionaires and billionaires who live in New Jersey and New York and California and those high tax states. You all know this, folks. I say it every week. I'm from the great state of Illinois, the land of Lincoln. Illinois is the third or fourth highest tax state, and Illinois is losing more people. The two states that in the last 10 years, according to the Census Bureau, that have lost the most people are New York, number one, Illinois, number two, and California, number three. And I think that New Jersey is number four. You're losing your greatest resource. Listen to me on this. You are taxing your tax hell states. And people don't want to live in tax hells. They want to live in tax havens. So I think it's a really bad idea to be raising the taxes on the so-called rich. And by the way, the rich people are the people who run the companies in this great United States. One more point before we break. I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal headline today. I want to turn to COVID for a minute. And here is the headline from the Wall Street Journal. CDC halves social distance guidance for K-12 classrooms. And what they're saying here is that they are now basically saying 3 feet, not 6 feet, social distancing. And they're also saying it is time. The CDC, this is not Steve Moore. This is not the Wall Street Journal. This is not Fox News. This is the Center for Disease Control is saying it is safe to put our kids back in the classroom. It is safe to do so. We have got to get our kids back in the classroom. And I'm not talking about 1 day a week or 2 days a week or 3 days a week or 4 hours a day. We want full-time classrooms for our kids. And we need it in New York. We need it in New Jersey. We need it in California. We need it in Illinois. I have two high school teens. One of them goes to a Catholic school. He's been in class since September. The other one does not have, he has to go to the public school, and he is not getting an education. And it's hurting our kids. You know this, folks. Every parent out there is listening to the show. You know the damage this is doing to our children. So I say, if the public schools don't want to open, I like the idea of let's give a scholarship or a voucher or a tax credit or something so parents can send their kids to schools that are open, because our next generation is being so harmed by these policies. All right. We are going to be right back. Thank you for listening to my rant. As you can tell, folks, I feel very strongly about this. I know you do, too. I know you do, too. And that's why I need you to call in and give me your opinion on, number one, do we need to secure the border? Number two, do you think this is the right time to raise taxes in the United States and or New York City and New Jersey? And that number, one more time, write this down, folks. You can start calling in about 10 minutes. 1-800-848-WABC. You're listening to More Money, and I will be right back.
This is More Money with economist Steve Moore. Now, Steve Moore.
Welcome back, folks. This is More Money. Thank you for joining some of your Saturday afternoon with me on this wonderful radio station, 77 Tuck Radio, WABC. And I want to do a shout out to my friend John Katsimides, who is a superstar, allows me to do this show. And John, the city of New York needs you. You need to be the next mayor of New York, or maybe the next governor of New York, because we need sensible people and sane people who know something about creating jobs and running businesses. And there's nobody that better than the owner of Tuck Radio, WABC, than John Katsimides. But In the meantime, I want to give you that hotline. Again, by the way, I love this. We're getting a lot of callers in, so it's fantastic about these two issues, about especially about what do we do about our border crisis. The number 1-800-848-WABC. But in the meantime, I want to introduce one of my great friends and one of the great investment advisors out there in the whole U.S. of A. I'm talking about Jason Trenor. He is chairman and chief executive officer of Strategist Research Partners. And Jason, I see here you have a new book out, My Side of the Street. My Side of the Street. Jason, thanks so much for joining us.
How are you? How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well. Thank you for taking some time.
I loved your rant on opening the schools. I couldn't agree more.
Well, Jason, thanks for joining us. And are you strapped in? Are you strapped in? Because I'm going to go rapid fire with you today. Are you ready,
okay,
Jason?
I'm ready to go.
Okay. I'm going to go right down the line. I got about five or six really key issues I want to talk to you about. Okay. Now I'm going to put a supposition out there, and I want you to tell me if you agree or disagree and why you agree or disagree. Okay, ready? Here we go. Number one, I say it is high time we get the American economy open. And once we do, we're going to see a lot of growth in the second half of 2021. And so I am very optimistic about the second half of this year if we can get our businesses open.
I agree completely. And I think it's moving. The good news, I think it's moving that way. I think so we're not quite there yet, but I think politically, I think people are questioning appropriately some of the things that they've been doing for the last year in terms of some of the lockdowns. And I think the people are leading the politicians on this. So I
agree.
What you were saying is I think is going to happen, and it's going to be the best stimulus we can get.
Okay, number two. You ready? Number two.
Yep.
I'm worried about the stock market. I'm not bullish on the stock market right now. I think that prices are high. I think there's a little bit of irrational exuberance. I think Washington is out of control, and there is a political risk in investing in stocks right now. Agree or disagree?
I disagree slightly, okay. Which is to say that I think there are pockets of real speculation out there. I'd be probably very careful of the SPAC market, for instance. I think you started to see some of the very high flying tech stocks really start to weaken a bit as long term interest rates have moved higher.
Right.
By the same token, the earnings yield on the market is significantly higher than the 10-year treasury yield. So, and money growth is growing at about 26%. So it gets very hard to be short financial assets.
Right.
If the Fed is printing money at this rate, the question will be when inflation really becomes an issue that forces the Fed's hand, in my view.
So, Jason, I did something very stupid after the election. All right. For full disclosure, I pulled a lot of my money out of the market, and it's just gone right up, 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 up. So are you saying to folks that you think that this bull market will continue for, and if so, how long?
I think it's hard to stand in front of it. It's simply because the amount of stimulus that you're putting into the system almost guarantees that for a while, you're going to have some sort of sense of prosperity, and earnings will follow suit. I think it's more the market itself may not provide great returns, but I do think there are pockets of the market, and we're talking particularly about value-oriented stocks, so financials, energy, basic materials, industrials. We think those stocks, those sectors are going to outperform tech, communications, a lot of the things that have been really the biggest beneficiaries from what we call financial repression since the global financial crisis.
So I'm going to give another supposition. Tell me if you think I'm right or wrong. You know, the sectors of the market that I like the most right now are the ones that were really damaged the most by the shutdown. So retailers, you know, I see that movie theaters are starting to open up again, you know, airlines, for example. In other words, I'm looking at the industries that were damaged the most by the lockdowns and saying, hey, maybe that's the area where people should invest in. Am I right or am I wrong?
I think you're right. I think a lot of the stocks have moved already, although they're below where they were before the pandemic. So there's still room, but there's, you know, people have been anticipating this very strong rally in the second half. And I'm maybe to overlap politics with the markets. I mean, as an example, you might like this. I like energy stocks, and it's largely because I think while President Trump was very bullish for the act of drilling, he wasn't particularly good for the stocks because there was a lot of supply. President Biden, in my opinion, is quite the opposite. He's very bearish for drilling. He's making it harder to drill. And as a result, I think that the price of energy is going to continue to remain high. And I think the stocks are going to reflect that. Stocks are going to do quite well. So there are political angles to this as well that I think, because this is a big change. There's no two ways about it in terms of regulation. And as far as fiscal policy, there's no two ways about it.
So two more quick ones, Jason. I'm talking to Jason Trenert, who is the CEO of Strategist, one of the great investment advisory firms in the country. I learned so much from your reports every week, Jason. I love the analysis that you and Dan Clifton do. It's just amazing stuff. How worried should we be about inflation and higher interest rates over the course of the next couple of years?
I think pretty worried. I think, you know, in the next few months, I would say there's clearly going to be an inflation scare, in my opinion. And that's, again, of the $1.9 trillion, I'm sure you've gone through this, of the $1.9 trillion of the last fiscal stimulus package, a trillion of it will be spent in the next 5 months. And so it's difficult not to imagine there being, and you're seeing it, some commodity prices. It's hard not to see there being bottlenecks and other potentially transitory moves in inflation. Over the longer term, though, I think, you know, it is a worry for me as well, because I don't like to see this type of spending really driven by government spending, which it tends to be less productive. If all the spending was going into the economy because of capital spending or things along those lines, you would get a lot of productivity out of it, and you probably have less inflationary pressures. It's a long-winded way of saying, it's easy.
Well,
to
let
do
me put it like this, Jason.
It's hard to get out of them.
How high do you see inflation going?
Well, I would say, I mean, it's at least what the Fed is telling you they want it to get to, which is 2.5, and
right.
So it's probably. You know, I it would be nice if there was that level of precision in monetary policy.
Right.
There's not. So I think it's pretty likely you're going to probably get into the 3-4% range before the Fed. We'll see how high it needs to get before the Fed really clamps down on it. But they're telling you they're going to let it run.
Okay. Last question. And Jason, thank you so much. I know it's a Saturday afternoon, your time for relaxing. So thanks for taking some time. Last question. I am making the point to our listeners that I think raising taxes right now on investment, on American corporations, on American small businesses, on energy, on wealth is insane. I think it's going to hurt the economy. I think it's going to hurt the market. Am I overreacting?
No, I don't think you're overreacting. I think and this is the way you don't get inflation, and this is almost kind of brings in the Japan scenario where you just keep throwing money at the economy, and you keep expanding the Fed's balance sheet, and yet you're stuck in this economic malaise for a long period of time. And it seems to me once you're going down this path, you might as well go for it, and you at least get a chance of growing your way out of it. But here, this is precisely the wrong time, it seems to me, given what you're doing, given the choices you've already made. It just seems like you're going to sterilize whatever benefits you're going to get from it.
Couldn't agree more. Jason, thank you. Can I have you on in the next couple of weeks? You give our listeners such great advice. That's Jason Trenert from Strategist. Thanks for coming on, Jason. I want to get you on next week or the week after, because there were about five other things I wanted to ask you about, but we ran out of time. That's Jason Trenert, and have a great weekend, my friend.
Take care, my friend.
Okay, so I want to turn quickly to my next guest, Mark Siegel. You know Mark from Fox News. He is, as I said earlier on the show, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a physician. I'm not a scientist. I don't understand this stuff. And what I love about Mark is he makes this stuff understandable. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Dr. Siegel, it's great to be with you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me. A pleasure.
So let's get right into it. Wall Street Journal today, front page, Mark. CDC have social distance guidance for K through 12 classrooms. Right thing to do or wrong thing to do?
Of course, it's the right thing to do. And the expression I've been using for this, Steve, is follow the science, but at a great distance. And when you follow it at a great distance, when you follow at a great distance, you know what you do? You do why you're interested in this. You create tremendous economic damage on top of psychological and emotional physical damage for waiting so long. We were warning last spring about this. There were studies coming out of Europe that shows that schools could be open. There was a big study in Australia. Schools could be open. Europe kept studying this, and then we started studying it in the United States. There was a big study out of Wisconsin at 3 feet, by the way. They studied 3 feet. Schools should be open. You know why schools should be open? It's very simple. You don't even need the science that they're following with a telescope. Here's why schools should be open. Because if you take kids out of the structured environment of schools, that's when they're more likely to do untrackable things like spread things. And also, kids don't get COVID that as easily. They don't spread it as easily. The younger the child, the less they can spread COVID. They don't spread it to teachers very much. So teachers outside of school are more likely to get it in the community. All of this are things that we knew. Finally, CDC waited. They waited, Steve, for a study out of Boston, and I interviewed one of the lead researchers last week. Looked at 500,000 kids and proved the same thing. They had to wait till 500,000 to 600,000 people were studied, and then they agreed.
Okay, second question. I've been saying, because I read it in the Wall Street Journal, I've heard other scientists say this, that by the end of April, that virtually all the people in this country who want the vaccine will have it, or at least early May. And at that time, and correct me if I'm wrong in my analysis, I'm not a doctor, you are, there is no reason for America to be shut down at all. I mean, why do we need to have continued lockdowns and restrictions if people are vaccinated? And am I right about the timeline?
Well, I see both issues slightly differently, which is why you have me on the show. This is why you have me on.
Yeah, you're the doctor. I'm not a doctor. You are. That's why I need your expertise.
Okay. First of all, Steve, I don't think lockdowns ever made sense.
Me neither.
The purpose of lockdowns was to push the virus into the community and out of out of the businesses and out of the schools and into the community, and then where you supposedly could contain it. But what happened was in the community, that's where it got spread. So 70% of the spread was studied last spring in New York. 70% of the spread occurred in households. They could only find one case that it spread on subways. And when they study this, now it's not that it's never spread that way. I mean, you can have super spreader events, but it was a wrongheaded idea. Lockdowns came from 1918, from the Spanish flu, and even then, it only worked in advance. It only works in New Zealand, which says we only got one case. Let's isolate it and close the continent. That actually works. That kind of lockdown works. Without severe travel barriers, it never, ever is going to work.
Well, by the way, let me just interrupt you for 1 second. You know, I was looking at the state data, where the pandemic has hit the hardest. And like Hawaii has had almost no cases. I mean, it sort of makes the point. Now, they did a lot of damage to their economy by shutting everything down, but they were able to contain the virus.
Yeah, that's a great point, Steve. You can't do lockdowns as a halfway hand-waving measure unless you're a politician, right? So it's an all-or-none thing, and when it's in the community, it's already too late. Second part of your question is this. It's a little more complicated. First of all, we're not differentiating between those who are immune and had COVID already because we don't have a good test for that versus those we're vaccinating. So the answer is that we would have to vaccinate probably two-thirds of Americans before we could really get to herd immunity. And I'm leaving out the X factor, which is how many are already immune. if we could test that and we knew that, then the number might not be two-thirds of Americans. It might be one-half. So you know where I'm going with this. The issue is compliance. It's not going to be vaccine availability. It's going to be in May and June, can we get the remaining people to take this thing? I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to do it person by person. I'm doing it on TV. I'm doing it now on the radio. I'm begging people to take this vaccine because the vaccine is incredibly safe. The technology has been around since the 1990s. It didn't happen yesterday. We just developed a formulation for this particular virus this year. We've had this stuff. And now it's being given to 100 million people safely, and it's working. If everybody takes it, yes, we're going to be out of this thing by the summer. No question.
So, Mark, I have family members who are afraid of taking the vaccine, and you're telling them, you're telling me and telling my family members, we have nothing to worry about.
Not only that, I can't understand why people wouldn't. I wrote a book on fear, as you know, that was a bestseller years ago and another one just this year. I don't understand how come people can't compute how much more afraid I am of this virus than of the vaccine. I mean, that's your decision. Which scares you more? The virus, which can have long-term consequences, which can actually, if you're older, you know, With the vaccine not being 100% effective, by the way, I want everybody that's near an old person.
Do I need my kids to get vaccinated?
I think if your kids get vaccinated, that will help to decrease the amount of virus in the world, which is all what we want. So yes, yes. And right now, by the way, right now we can only give the vaccine to the Pfizer to those over the age of 16, Moderna 18, J&J 18. But in the coming months, we're going to get approval because the big clinical trials are going on for younger teens and for children, and it looks very, very safe.
Okay, two or three more really quick ones because we're running out of time here, and Mark, I really appreciate your time. I know how busy you are. Number one, we keep hearing about every day, like the variants, all the variants, and now this new one, and it's going to kill everyone. And, you know, and people are afraid of that. I get afraid of it when I read these sensational headlines. How worried should we be about the UK variant, the Africa variant, this and that? I can't even keep track of them all. Is this sensationalism or do we need to be really worried?
It's both. We don't need to be really worried. It is sensationalism, even the word variant, the word mutant, right? The word mutation. Right. It's like you're suddenly into a sci-fi movie. It wasn't bad enough before. You were locked down. You were shut down. You were masked. You were mummied. But now there's a variant. Well, obviously, it's a lot of it is hype. But I want to tell you that what really works against the variant is the vaccine. Again, that's your tool against fear here. Because down in Florida, where 50% of people, 50% of the new strains are the variant, 70% of those over 65 have been vaccinated. It slowed the spread even of the variant. In New York, we're not quite there yet, so the variant is more of a problem. Get vaccinated. It covers almost all of these variants.
Well, last question for you. I am frustrated with the CDC, and I made this point a year ago, right, about the start of this terrible virus, that the CDC was not prepared. In other words, the purpose that for the CDC, which gets billions and billions of dollars every year, is to be ready for this kind of pandemic. And granted, these don't happen very often, thankfully. But, you know, I was reading the CDC website, you know, in the months and years before this all happened. And it was all about, you know, gay rights issues and gun violence and, you know, global warming and things that have nothing to do with their core mission. And I think that they were caught kind of unaware and unready. Am I being unfair?
No, you're not being unfair. I know a lot of people at the CDC. There's some very top scientists and great physicians there. John Brooks, their chief medical officer for COVID, I've interviewed. He's tremendous. Ann Shuka, tremendous. Rochelle Walensky, who's now taken the helm, is a very, very smart infectious disease expert. The problem is that, A, they were completely unprepared when it came. They weren't able to get boots on the ground from China. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand how contagious it was. It was in our communities before they knew about it. They made 100 test kits that were faulty, if you recall. And from then on, they've been playing catch-up. And these rigorous, overly done regulatory guidelines that everyone thinks they're reading the Bible have made things a lot worse. They're always behind. Because they were caught unawares, I believe that translated, Steve, into their being too rigorous now and too regimented. And I call it a twister game where you have to put your foot on a specific square before you can go to school.
So I think they were guilty of a little bit of mission creep and getting involved in all sorts of things that weren't really pertinent to their primary mission. One last point, and 20 or 30 seconds. Just to summarize, you are upbeat about where we are right now. You think we're going to be able to get back to normal when?
I'm very upbeat about the direction we're going. I think we should use Europe as a warning sign not to be locked down. I think that we should be staying ahead of this. I don't think there's any reason to be locked down now. I think our schools should be open now. I think, continue to wear a mask, social distance. But as long as we get vaccinated, we will be out of this by the summer.
Amen. Thank you. Dr. Siegel, you are a great treasure to this country. I learned so much from you on Fox News. It's just a privilege to have you on the show. I'd love to have you on again in a few weeks to give us an update.
I'd love to come on, Steve. Thank you for having me. Great pleasure. I feel the same about you. Pleasure on.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That's the great Mark Siegel. And now I am going to get right to your questions because we've got so many call-ins. I'm so honored to have people call in. And let's just get right to it. We got Douglas in Trenton, New Jersey. He wants to talk about the border wall. Douglas, what do you got?
Hey, I agree. I was going by Danielle Sittel, Sittel, on Google. On 9/2018 at 5 p.m. on the E285 phone in our Trenton psych, you can see him being assaulted.
Who should I take next?
I have the tapes of Trump admit he bribed Russia $8 million to rig against Hillary. He says, you've got to let him fight and then pull him apart like little kids. He's trying to keep me off the phone. When he says you can make $1 million, but you can't have those two items unless you get out, is two digital recorders that prove that he bribed Russia $8 million. And he admits on air he threw me in jail. He says every 6 months he's going to make a new excuse to keep me here or him and Eric will be indicted. You could see in Danielle's blog, she said, talking about the old two older females in town like my look. It's two judges' daughters. Obtaining me is easy as search and click online. She's been sold online since Get the Message somehow, since secondary school. Blur all the other lines in Danielle's blog.
All right. Well, Douglas, look, I got to cut you off because I've got like seven or eight other people waiting patiently in line. Thanks for calling. I want to talk about Danny. To Danny in Westchester County on the border.
All right there, Steve, and everybody's putting their radios back on. Their internet connections are going. Listen, on the border, the military has to be put on the border.
That's you want the military? You want the military?
Of course you need. Yeah, they're invading my country. Of course, it's a basic thing. Establishment people don't want it on the border. You need a wall down there. Countries with visa violations will lose their visa privileges under my circumstances here, what I would believe.
But Danny, go ahead.
You know, responsible for this virus, my man. They're going to be held accountable financially. Everything that comes into the play has to be done to China. They have to be held financially. They have to be sued by the American people.
All right, Danny, good. Good points. Look, I agree with you on one thing. I do agree that China has to be held responsible. This is the China Wuhan virus, no question about it. I don't believe that it's immigrants who brought this virus into the United States. I think that the hardworking people come in, they are great people, but we should make sure that when people come in, they're tested because we don't want people coming into this country if the vaccine. You've always had to pass a health test to come into this country. We should continue that. All right, David in Connecticut.
Hi, Steve. You mentioned that you thought the Biden administration was soft on immigration. I disagree. Yep. I think they've got a hard-nosed plan in place. This will allow them to flood new Democrats in, obviously.
You think this is deliberate?
Oh, but no question about it. And they'll put up with the momentary blowback because they're not getting major blowback from the liberal media. They're getting a lot of blowback from people like us. They don't care about our opinion, and they don't care about the border, and this lets them get rid of ICE.
So you're saying you think that they're in favor of illegal immigration?
Oh, absolutely. They want this flood of people to come in and register as Democrats almost immediately, and they'll hold, and you combine that, Steve, with H.R. 1, and you have a Democrat party that will own the White House and the legislative branch for as long as we shall live. They've got it in place. This plan works perfectly.
Well, you know what? I would not have agreed with you 6 months ago, but I'm looking at what the Democrats are doing at the in the Biden administration at the border, and the fact that they want to give these $2,000 payments to even illegal immigrants who come into the country. They want welfare for illegal immigrants. It's almost like a, you know, an invitation sign to come into this country illegally. And I don't know what their motivation is. You know, they even want to allow you know, illegal immigrants to vote. You know, so I think there is something to what you're saying, and I'm not a conspiratorialist. I cannot fathom why the Democrats continue to allow illegal immigrants to come in across our border. But I want to go to line four. That is Stephen in Rockland County, who disagrees with me on soaking the rich. So, Stephen, I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, don't put words in my mouth, please. I didn't say that.
Okay, go ahead.
The rich.
All right, go ahead.
I'm not going to say that, but I'm going to put forth facts, Steve.
Okay, go. We have 1 minute. Stephen, I'm going to give you 1 minute. So give me your facts.
Right.
Give me your facts.
Okay. So you made a comment about, you know, if you send anyone to a banquet and, you know, who's going to pay.
Right.
Okay. In the meantime, how about let's switch it around. Let's say there are 100 plates and you send the first the 10 wealthiest people into the room, all right, and they take 75 of the plates and leave only 25 plates to be divided for the other 90%. That's the flip side of the coin, Steve. And you know that my statistics are factual. Okay?
So, Stephen, okay, how high do you want the taxes to go?
Steve, let's have a solution.
What is it?
I don't know. Now I want to work out a solution. So do you think that a progressive tax, let's say for billionaires, that they should pay like an extra 5 cents on every dollar they earn over $10 million?
Stephen, how about a flat tax? Everybody pays 18%. People up to the poverty level don't pay any tax. If you make $1 billion, you're going to pay 18% on $1 billion. That's, if my math is correct, you're going to pay $180 million in taxes. Why don't we have a flat tax and make everybody pay their fair share and get rid of the loopholes?
I will admit that I'm not qualified to answer that question.
Okay.
But you know what? You want to save Social Security? How about this?
Yeah.
Why don't you just lift that ridiculous $131,000 cap and you can save it? All right. I mean, these are just small things.
Yeah.
All right. But there are other sides to, you know, I heard what you said. And, you know, because I am friends with billionaires, Steve, just like you. All right. And they are not averse to, you know, seeing the that pass through tax, you know, the hedge fund tax loophole that is
carried interest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
okay.
You know, there are a lot of things. And you know what? I'm all for solution.
OK, Stephen, I got to cut you off because, by the way, I very much appreciate your point of view. That's why we have this show. We need to hear from people on all political perspectives. I'm going to take your example. Of you say that the rich come in and they take 75 plates. And my point is, no, wait a minute. These people who are successful, whether you're talking about, you know, a great baseball player, you're talking about a great musician, or you're talking about someone who is a great businessman, they don't take, they give. The only way they can make money in the free enterprise system is by giving us things that we want. Do I think that Jeff Bezos is somehow, you know, a villain? No, he's created an incredible company that we all use every day. We benefit from us. Nobody puts a gun to our head and makes us, use Amazon, but we use it because it's a great, great service that benefits us. The same thing with Zuckerberg, who, created one of the great companies in Facebook. And by the way, I'm not even a Facebook subscriber. But the point is, I disagree that they take from us. I think rich people, for the most part, actually are people who contribute to our economy. And that's why I want to see more rich people, not less. Now, I want to go to the next caller because we have another person who has an opinion on this. Paul from Brooklyn also wants to talk about taxes. Okay, let's go to Jim in Manhattan.
Hello, Mr. Moore.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'd support raising taxes on people who make more than $1 million a year, not middle or upper middle class at $400,000. The government needs the money with the huge spending on economic support the last year, and they can afford it. And, you know, the super rich.
How high, Paul, how high would you want that tax to be?
That I don't know. I'll leave that to somebody else, but I would start at
Let me ask you this. I mean, I'm so glad you called in. You're my focus group for the day. So how about 30%, 40%, 50%, 60%? How much should they pay?
Oh, you mean an increase of 30 more percent?
Well, I'm saying what tax rate should
the tax rate should be about at least 38 or 40%. That's what I would say.
Well, you know, we're there right now. We have it right now with actually you're pretty close to where we are right now. We have a 37% tax rate. And I want to, so I just want to make sure that people understand. And by the way, I very much appreciate your call, Paul, because you make a great point. And I do want the rich to pay their fair share. And so this goes right in to my economic lesson of the day, which is simply this. If you want the rich to pay more taxes, if you want them to contribute more to our government, the best way that history proves, whether it's JFK or whether it is Donald Trump or Ronald Reagan, the best way to make the rich pay more taxes is by cutting their tax rate, not raising it. You know why? Because you get more output, you get more jobs, you get more GDP, and you get more people working. And when that happens, you get more revenue, not less. So I say, let's have a low, flat rate that everybody pays, no loopholes, no carve-outs, no tax attorneys. That's my lesson for the day. This is Steve Moore. You've been listening to 77 WABC Radio. More money. I will see you next time, same time. Have a great weekend, folks.